and welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, we have the Executive Director of Simon's Heart, Jennifer Parado. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Before we begin, would you like to give us that elevator speech? Tell us, what is Simon's Heart?
Sure. Yeah. So the vision of Simon's Heart is really to protect communities and parents from losing a child to an undetected, treatable heart condition.
Many years ago, the co-founder, Darren, was on the show, and we talked about that, and it's just been a wonderful thing to watch it grow and to see how your work has made a huge difference to so many people, not just in the Delaware Valley, but now across the country. And of course, we're all aware of what happened to the Bills player, Damar Hamlin. And this happens on the field. And the interesting thing was your co-founder, Phyllis Sudman, wrote a letter that actually praised the NFL's response. And that's what I'd like to talk about at first. What happened and why the NFL responded the way they did?
Yeah, I mean, well, first and foremost, thanks for so much for having us on today. Simon's Heart started 18 years ago when Simon passed away of sudden cardiac arrest. So when Phyllis wrote that op-ed, she is a parent that has seen this happen to her child, and unfortunately, he did not survive. So the reason that it's important to have an emergency action plan, which is what the NFL implemented, they not only knew the chain of survival, which is call 911, start CPR, get that AED, but to assign an individual that is always with the team that will be doing those acts. So the emergency action plan, which was so clutch for Damar's case on Monday night.
How important is it to be ready for an emergency? Is this something that happens that often?
Look, I'm happy to always be prepared, regardless of what the statistics are of how much it happens. It happens maybe a few thousand times a year to teens and young adults, but we're seeing more and more cases because Simon's Heart has more of an awareness to the organization and to the nation, right? So people are reaching out to us when things like this are happening.
Let's talk about Simon's Heart, and let's talk about Simon and the founding, because he had a rare heart abnormality that it turns out is not so rare. And Simon's Heart has really helped bring attention to this on a national level.
Sure. I mean, Simon, when he passed away, they thought it was SIDS. They really had no idea what it was. And then the pediatrician said, hey, guys, we think this was a heart condition. We think this was genetic. Mom and dad, get your hearts checked. So they did. And it turns out mom had the same rare condition that Simon passed away from. In essence, Simon's death saved her life.
Let's talk then about heart abnormalities. And what was wrong? This was a genetic factor for Simon and for his mom, too, that now is aware of what could happen to her. But what are some of the other things that affect our hearts that could lead to a heart situation or a sudden cardiac arrest?
Sure. So Simon's Heart, when we started screening hearts across the area. We do free heart screenings in the community. We screen for more than 35 different heart conditions, not just the one that Simon passed away from. So, you know, there are sometimes signs and symptoms. There are sometimes a genetic condition caught. Sometimes there is no apparent reason why someone goes into cardiac arrest. So that is why we have to be prepared in case of an event.
I know for the football player, and in his case, he suffered a chest injury or at least a chest blow just before his arrest. And it could have been that, and we won't know that, but it could have been it was because at just the right moment, it was a fluke with the electrical beat of his heart at just the right moment. But for a lot of players, we see every year terrible stories about young men, young women collapsing on a playing field. Maybe they're playing basketball. Maybe it's a pickup game even. And these could have been preventable, couldn't they?
Well, we don't claim to know if they could have been prevented or not. We really don't know what that answer is unless we have checked their heart and proven without a reasonable doubt that that could have been prevented. So again, it's really having that action plan in place.
Well, talk a little bit though about your screening programs, because that, when I mentioned earlier that thanks to Simon's Heart, a lot of physicians and a lot of hospitals and I think a lot of states now, they are looking for this genetic issue thanks to your advocacy. But that led to you doing the screening programs.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have screened over 20,000 hearts in the greater Philadelphia area. Those are high school kids ages 14 and up, because what we know is sudden cardiac arrest is the number one cause of death in student athletes. So our mission is to get in front of those athletes, spread awareness, and then to also, by doing the heart screening, we're doing a few things when we do that. We don't just go in and take a stethoscope to their heart. We also do an EKG. We do an echo, if that is necessary, which is a sonogram on the heart. And then they're always required to do a follow-up with a pediatric cardiologist if, in fact, they have an issue.
And where are you doing these screenings? Because this is the really cool thing. I think this is probably your greatest mission. You do advocacy work, and we're going to talk about the AEDs as well. But these screenings, you do these nationally now.
Well, we do them mostly here in the greater Philadelphia area. We are partnering with hospitals, volunteers, cardiologists, sports cardiologists at different institutions to make sure that not only can they do a heart screening with us as we do it in the community, but are they asking the questions and looking for those signs and symptoms out with their patients. The National Academy of Pediatrics announced last year, for the first time ever, we've been preaching this to the choir, please follow and ask for signs and symptoms. I have an 11-year-old. When she was 9, I had just started this role at Simon's Heart, and she fainted. I went to the pediatrician and said, hey, my kid fainted. Is she okay? He said, oh, she's just dehydrated. I said, oh, hi, I'm Jen Parado. I'm the ED of Simon's Heart. I want to talk to you about what I know about this, because we know, unfortunately, a lot of signs and symptoms can result to cardiac arrest.
You know, for disclosure here, I had a cardiac arrest that I still don't know what happened, but I managed to have it on the floor of an emergency room. So I was an extremely lucky, lucky person. You don't know who it will strike. You don't know when. You don't know where. And again, this could happen to absolutely anyone.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That's such a personal piece of information about you. Ironically, this July, we were at our golf outing, and a lot of our volunteers were saying, hey, unfortunately, we've heard some terrible news. A 19-year-old has passed away, and it's seemingly of a heart condition. It turns out she passed away of the same heart condition in which Simon passed away from 18 years ago. Since she has passed, they have discovered her father, her grandmother, siblings, other individuals in their family have also been diagnosed with the same condition. We could have prevented this had we known through these generations that they had the same heart condition. So it is my honor to really, you know, talk about this family as they've become more a part of Simon's Heart and they raise awareness themselves. Ironically, at a meeting I was earlier with, it was one of this young lady's best friends happened to be interning at my meeting, came over and hugged me. So I don't believe in coincidences. I really believe that we're supposed to be here 18 years ago when Simon passed away and now with this young lady.
And of course, that just brings home again the importance of the mission and the screenings. Mm-hmm. Before you began this advocacy in Simon's Heart, I'm saying, there really were no required screenings before an athlete stepped on the field for the first time. A freshman would suit up, go out there for training, and it was a crapshoot. Nobody knew really what was going on underneath that jersey. And yours is really a volunteer screening, and you're doing these in schools that have said, yeah, why don't you come out and do this, and we'll just put out the word. So talk a little bit about this programming.
Yeah, I mean, there is no requirement for students to have their hearts checked. It really was interesting what happened as our founder, Darren Sudman, realized that when the concussion law was put in, that, oh, wait, we shouldn't be putting kids on the field after they've had a concussion. Can we pass a similar piece of legislation to make sure that's not happening to student athletes with their hearts? Can we check their hearts? Can we understand the signs and symptoms? So we've passed legislation to educate parents, but we'd like to see a deeper legislation come on board, and we're currently working that both statewide and federally to make sure that it goes beyond just the fine print in their forms that they have to sign before they go on the field.
So talk, though, about how you do the screenings, because, and then we're going to get back into the planning. But Simon's Heart does so much work towards preventing that sudden cardiac arrest, or at least warning you about it, that we really want to talk about that first.
Sure. So our heart screenings involve a few components. First, we partner with a school and a family usually that is at a school that will help us get the word out. And then at the screening itself, once the kids have registered through our IRB-approved database to do research on later, they register for their time slot. They come in, we do their vitals, we know all of their family history, we know if they've had any red flags, and then we have volunteer cardiologists come in and read those EKGs. So they get their vitals, they get an EKG, if necessary, they'll get an echo, and then they'll be sent on their merry way with a copy of their scan that they can then present to their pediatrician.
Organizations across the country have been reaching out. And that's when I said that you're now across the country. People are listening to what you're saying, and they are offering these screenings. But are they required anywhere? Are we just a little bit behind, or are they?
Yeah, some states are requiring them, but it's really about do you have a method to implement? So it's all good and well to insist that all these students get their hearts checked. But who's doing that? Who's reading it? Who understands sports cardiology? There are so many small components of what we're doing that it's hard to implement unless you have a plan. Similar to, we're on the Rare Disease Council for the state of Pennsylvania. What we understand about rare diseases is if you can send your disease up to officially everyone gets screened, but you have to have an action plan once there's a diagnosis. So similar to this, we have to have a plan in place that the whole country, so that's insurance companies, that's our legislators, that is every pediatrician. So it's so much bigger than we are right now, but to create this awareness, we know individuals are ready to step up and take care of it.
So when somebody does get that screening, you said that they leave with a copy of the test results, their screen. And then is it a mandatory follow-up? Cardiologists are actually volunteering their time, and they're right there when this is happening. Are they reading these scans right there in the school?
Absolutely. They're reading them right there in the school. But we want the student, if there is something caught, that they then bring the scan back to their pediatrician and or with a pediatric cardiologist. Because we're a volunteer-based group, we want your official doctor to be taking care of you.
This is a great thing that you are doing this in schools, because, of course, that's where you can start that plan. And I know that you do a lot of work with students in getting them to learn how to react in a medical emergency.
Absolutely. So we have a couple of great ways. As I mentioned before, we have the chain of survival. So we teach them call 911, tell someone else to go grab that AED, and to begin CPR. We have a really fun way to teach CPR. It's called our CPR jukebox. You might have learned doing CPR to the song Stayin' Alive, right? Mm-hmm. Well, there are hundreds of songs that go to the beats per minute that are required to do CPR. And a lot of our young people, they don't even know the song Stayin' Alive. So you can do it to Baby Shark if you want to, as long as that's, I know. As long as that song goes 120 beats per minute, it is the pace at which you should do CPR. So we have a giant inflatable jukebox. We have kickballs that are with us, and we have a playlist on Spotify. If you go right on there, you can look up CPR jukebox and find all the songs. Kid friendly, not kid friendly, country, whatever you want. And then we say, grab a ball, pick a song, push to the beat. Surprise, you're learning CPR. We really want it to be fun because we don't want you to be scared and nervous to approach someone that has collapsed. So now my 9-year-old can do that. She'll teach you anytime you want how to do CPR that way.
I learned on the dummy, and I found out that don't collapse in front of me. I'm just praying that it will be adrenaline that gets me to do it properly in an emergency. But we all took it here at Beasley Media Group. We brought in trainers and we learned how to do it. And we learned at that time, too, that you can do it hands only. You don't have to do the mouth-to-mouth that I think we all remember from the old TV shows, you know, Emergency and all of those.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's why we're trying to make it a little more user-friendly for high school students to feel comfortable in case their buddy collapses and they're all just practicing, you know, basketball on the court of their neighborhood.
And, you know, and this is an awful thing, but this past week I've been preparing for this conversation. And one of the things I found out was that if you're a woman, people are less likely to give you CPR.
Yeah.
And if you are of color, if you are poor, and there are just certain communities that you are less likely to receive CPR. So getting high schoolers to learn it and make it less onerous, is that a cure for this deficiency?
You know, I love that you brought this up and did your homework, because that is one of our priorities. As the first female CEO of Simon's Heart, we have all female staff. We really understand that those statistics, right? If you are a female, a person of color, you're not getting CPR at the quickest rate. I don't know if the high school program is a solution to it, but we are partnering with the School District of Philadelphia to make sure that everyone knows what they're doing, that the high school kids are feeling comfortable. We have a great ambassador program. We have ambassadors from across the region and some in other states that are providing advocacy and awareness for just approach. Please approach, because if you see someone collapse, don't be afraid to take the next step.
And the next step isn't actually the classic CPR. I know from the last time Simon's Heart was in that just getting into compressions, anything is better than nothing.
Absolutely. You're keeping that brain alive. I mean, that's what we want. That's really what you're doing. You're keeping the brain alive while you're doing those compressions and pumping that blood and oxygen.
And I've already mentioned that the mouth-to-mouth is no longer required. If you are comfortable doing it and you know how to do this, that's wonderful. But just starting those compressions. And you mentioned that chain of survival. And it sounds like a fun way to learn it in a high school, because it's a relay. You make it a game, too.
Yeah, we do make it a game. As many unique ways as we can really hit the memory of these kids, we're doing it.
Hey, if you're just joining us, this is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis. With us today, Jennifer Parado, Executive Director of Simon's Heart, which you can find at simonsheart.org. Simonsheart.org. Now, one of the steps, you mentioned the, obviously, compression, starting the CPR, calling 911, and then there is the AED, and that is a vital piece to someone who has a cardiac arrest, because, again, that's not a heart attack. Someone with a heart attack may ultimately go into a cardiac arrest, but if they're talking and they are alert, they're not getting CPR. But the AED can be the lifesaver, the difference between a great outcome, surviving, and not making it.
Totally. So someone that goes into cardiac arrest has a 10% chance of survival when they are not in a hospital environment. That 10% goes down very quickly if there's not an AED in place. As soon as that AED, as long as you're within 1 to 3 minutes of grabbing the AED, you're providing a better chance at survival for that patient.
Are AEDs that prevalent? Are there enough out there?
No. Being in this business now, all we do as a staff and volunteers is look, where's the nearest AED? Are we 3 minutes from it? What's the situation? I love our program manager, because she will always point out if there was one and if there is not one, and then we will immediately find the facilities person to see where we can find it. So unfortunately, they're not that expensive, right? But in the grand scheme of things, for a household to purchase one, it's not cheap like a fire extinguisher. But in my eyes, it would be nice if all of the sports community teams could have one, if there was special funding provided for them. So we do offer an opportunity for people to do that through our organization if they want one.
For someone who is not familiar with the AED and the operation of one, they are foolproof.
They really are. It is a easy touch of a button. We have a unique exercise. We have a kid's toy, and we have an AED. And sometimes we'll show it in a crowd of adults, sometimes a crowd of kids. And we say, hey, what's easier to push? Always the AED is easier to turn on. So it's a simple button. Once you press that button, the AED itself will tell you what to do. Cut the patient's shirt open. Place the pads here. If you haven't done it right, it'll tell you if you've done it wrong. What's really unique is regardless of what is happening to the patient, it won't shock the patient unless they're in cardiac arrest. So you can't accidentally shock a patient that doesn't need one. I think sometimes people really don't understand that or are afraid. Nope, go ahead, do it. If they need it, they'll get the shock that they need.
Does the machine itself decide?
Yeah. It's amazing what it can do. And it's so small. It's no bigger than the size of maybe your iPad.
And the terrible thing, too, is that, as you mentioned, that your coworker is pointing out the AEDs in the buildings. And even if a building has one, I would be willing to bet that 85% of the people in that building have no clue where the heck it is, because we took the class here. We all learned where they're located. But before we took that class, I didn't know where to find it. If someone had been doing CPR and someone else was calling 911 and they said, grab the AED, you're dead.
Yeah.
Ain't gonna happen. It wouldn't have happened before.
Yeah, that's why you have to have an emergency action plan, right? It's all good to have the AED unless you've trained everyone how to use it, where it is, what to go, what are the next steps. So you should absolutely always know where it is in the building.
And again, because they're so simple, that is the hardest part of using an AED, knowing where it is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We have a student that a few years ago, her name is Maeve, she collapsed on the ball field. She's playing softball. Her athletic trainer knew exactly where to get the AED. So she went into Maeve went into cardiac arrest. Tracy, her athletic trainer, ran, got the AED. They started compressions. They saved her life. This kid's in college, out of college, living her best life because someone knew the chain of survival, how to make sure that they were taken care of.
And isn't that just an amazing story? And this is not a one-off. This is happening daily. Someone is saved by these. But the thing is, you've got to have one. And as I mentioned, the hardest part of using it is knowing where it is. And the worst thing is if you don't have one available. And I know that that is part of your mission, is making sure that not only do we know how to do this chain of survival, but that there is an AED available, because CPR only goes so far.
Absolutely. So Simon's Heart has a program called Got AED. It is a crowdfunding opportunity for communities that have means to provide. You can create a link and a fundraising page, and you get, 100 people to donate $10 or 10 people to donate $100. AEDs right now running between $1,100 and $1,300 for our nonprofit rate. So that's, we don't take anything off the top. We just want you to have an AED. So you can fundraise through that at simonsheart.org, or you can talk to us about if you are a community that's in need, that doesn't have means, it's really concerned about other issues. We still want you to have an AED. In fact, that's more of a priority for me at Simon's Heart. So we will help you provide funding. We have generous donors that want to do that. And of course, if you're interested in donating to that, we are always open for that too.
Can someone contact you that maybe they have the ability to buy, but can they purchase them through you?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll offer the same nonprofit discount for them to provide an AED. We've done that with many families that have needed more than one in their household.
You know, we talked about knowing in Phyllis's case that she knows that she had the genetic disposition here. When someone does know that, do people keep AEDs in their homes for that reason?
Yeah, we actually have one family that has a lot of heart conditions in their family that has trickled down, similar if it's a genetic condition. She's placed an AED in their car, in their home, in their sister's home, in the places where the individuals travel. We know of children that have been diagnosed with a heart condition that they are immediately, like you're prescribed a medication, you're prescribed that AED to carry around with you. So there's many ways in which people keep their AEDs close to them. But if you are part of a sports group, a sports community, anything out in the field, even dancers, all of individuals that have that high cardio, I want to make sure that you can get an AED and have access to.
How well has insurance and our legislators, have they adopted or accepted the idea that AEDs are something that should be out there? And speaking of that, actually, what about CPR, mandating CPR? Is that part of your advocacy as well?
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, if the speakers would stop the fight that they're having, we could maybe pass some AED legislation at the federal level. So I know some is being presented right now that we support with some edits, and we're hoping to allow. I saw in the proposed bill that they're providing some funding to support AEDs as long as you work with a nonprofit or approved group, which is so great because that says to not only Simon's Heart, but all of the sister organizations around the country that are doing this type of work, that maybe there'll be some funding. It wasn't enough to my sister organizations, but it will be a good start.
I understand, though, that some school districts require CPR now as a condition of graduating.
Yeah, so we do actually have a course that is required for kids to watch that I think Simon's dad created it a few years ago. It's now been watched over 3 million times by students across the country to learn the signs and symptoms of sudden cardiac arrest. And those same kids, I think, are required to take some CPR training. I don't know if they're being officially certified, though. I'd have to do my research on that. But regardless of how they're getting it, I'm hopeful that the rest of the schools will learn how to do it, too.
And again, you don't actually have to have that certificate to save a life. And that's part of your training. It's just get those compressions going. Those balls are not that much different than somebody's chest.
Absolutely. That's exactly right.
I hate to say this, but we are at basically the two-minute warning here. If we would like to get involved with Simon's Heart, if we would like to reach out to you about classes or getting you into our school or learn more about how we can crowdsource and get AEDs in our community centers, how do we do this?
Sure. So go to simonsheart.org. All of our information is located on the website. And then we're on all the social channels. Just look for Simon's Heart. You'll see us right there. Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Insta. We're on TikTok, too, for those youngsters.
And do you go out to communities and talk to them? Do you try and get out to the neighborhood centers?
We do, absolutely. We are at community centers, events. We like a great music venue, so that way we already have the music going for the CPR jukebox. We are all over the area. We recently traveled to Texas even this year to provide the CPR jukebox. So we're out there. If you're interested in having us at one of your events, let us know. We have some generous sponsors that have allowed us to do that.
And go to simonsheart.org. There you will find out more information about all of their programming for the schools, for the communities. If you'd like to get involved with them, get them out to your organization to talk about this, or maybe you'd like to do that crowdsourcing to get AEDs available to your neighbors and friends and loved ones. You'll also find events calendar. I know you have Simon's Soiree is coming up in February. That'll be at Citizens Bank Park.
On February 4th, what better location could there be?
An absolutely wonderful one. And again, that will be at the website as well. That's simonsheart.org. My guest today, Jennifer Parado. She is the executive director of Simon's Heart Org. Jennifer, thanks for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having us.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.